This is Karin Zithas of ASCOA Online. As Joe Biden takes office, he's made immigration a top action item for his administration. And it's also a top issue on the agenda for relations with Mexico. But it's definitely not the only one. And there are questions about how the relationship will evolve with Mexican President Andrés Manuel López Obrador, also known as AMLO. I'm fortunate to be joined for this episode by Dr. Sergio Alcocer, the President of the Mexican Council on Foreign Relations. He also served as Deputy Minister for North America in Mexico's Foreign Ministry from 2013 to 2015. That means he worked with counterparts in Washington during the time Biden held the vice presidency, and he shares insights into how the AMLO and Biden governments can work together on issues such as trade, as well as near-term challenges, like security cooperation. Alcocer also shares an idea of a symbolic location where the two leaders could hold their first in-person meeting. Thank you for joining us.
You're listening to Latin America in Focus.
Latinoamérica en Foco.
América Latina en Foco.
A podcast by America Society, Council of the Americas, on politics, economics, and culture in the region.
Thank you so much, Sergio, for being with me today on Latin America in Focus. I want to get right down to business. There's been a lot of focus on what could go wrong in U.S.-Mexico relations with the Biden administration taking over, given how long it took AMLO to recognize Biden's electoral victory, and given the Mexican president's warm relationship with Donald Trump. So just to be a contrarian and to start on a positive note, what do you think is going to go right with this relationship?
Well, Karin, thank you very much, first of all. And I think the question is very interesting because there are many things that could go well if both administrations are interested in having a good relation. I think that AMLO is very much interested in having a good relation with the U.S. for pragmatical reasons, because he understands that having a good relation with the powerful neighborhood will help him move his agenda, or at least will not impede his agenda to be implemented. I think that the trade and the USMCA could be one of those topics in which right away both presidents could spell out good positive vibes, if you will. I think that just saying that Mexico is a great partner to the United States as it is, and vice versa, I think would be a good way to start a conversation between the two gentlemen, that they know each other for a short period of time, just for a meeting here and there, but they have never been president of both sides and making decisions as they are right now.
So you're saying trade will be an early issue. Now, we know that given developments in recent days, security will be another one and likely a more contentious issue. To catch up our listeners, in the fall, Mexico's former defense minister, General Cienfuegos, was detained upon arrival in the U.S. for involvement with organized crime. Amid tensions with Mexico, the U.S. sent him back here to Mexico, where his case was to be reviewed. Now, on January 14th, he was cleared of charges. The following day, on January 15th, AMLO's government released documents from the U.S. case, and AMLO said the charges were fabricated. Late that Friday night, the U.S. Department of Justice released a statement saying it was a valid case and saying that Mexico had violated a treaty by releasing the documents and that perhaps the U.S. cannot engage anymore in intelligence sharing with Mexico. So pretty dramatic developments. And this is happening right before the Biden administration is taking office. Why would Mexico do this? And what do you think of the timing?
Well, I think that every decision that López Obrador makes has to do with politics and elections. We are having an election in 5 months' time, in June. So that means that López Obrador is calibrating everything he does in order to support his Morena movement and to get the majority of the Congress. That for him is so relevant because that will be the only way that he could cement all the changes and transformations that he's eager to do or he's doing in Mexico. So I think that in this case, the decision has to do, first of all, to support the military, because that's the actual support that he has and all the changes that he's making. And we all know how the militarization in Mexico is going on. There are so many activities that the army had never been doing before, not even in Mexico, but elsewhere, that now the military is in charge of. And so he wants to be nice with the military, and certainly this is a move to in that direction. Secondly, he has a kind of a second derivative that if the U.S. government reacts angrily against López Obrador, then he can claim that in a nationalistic way that he is defending Mexico. And that will bring support to his movement. So it's a tricky move because on the other hand, you see the charges against Cienfuegos that had been contended actually in the news. There are a couple of pieces by Raimundo Riva Palacio claiming that the information that is in the file is deficient and inconsistent. So whether that is true or not, certainly López Obrador could have said that the Cienfuegos case was deficient and inconsistent and because of A, B, C, and D, and he could have restrained himself of publishing the file. I think that publishing all the documents really makes the U.S. government, whether Trump's or Biden administration, very angry. And I agree with the assessment that it violates the treaty. The main issue behind all this is the lack of trust that is being built towards López Obrador and perhaps towards the U.S. administration from the Mexican government. So I think it poses an interesting challenge to the Biden administration on what to do next, whether to push López Obrador and to put pressure on López Obrador government and in order that he can claim that he is defending the sovereignty of Mexico, or perhaps wait for a little bit. And then these 5 months talk about nice things that occur between our countries, like trade, for example, and then wait after the election to put more pressure on López Obrador on those topics, that is security, the anti-crime policy, the power that is growing and the brazenness of the cartels and so forth.
So this has been a pretty big rupture. And it sounds as though one suggestion you have for solving it is that in a way the Biden administration could let it wait for a little while. What other ways do you think the two governments could heal this break over security?
I think that the answer will be very different for both administrations. For López Obrador, a working relation will be one in which he expends the least amount of time in the relation that is based on total respect to what is happening in Mexico. And for the U.S., I think for this new administration, the Biden administration is quite different. Biden himself has said that he wants to be the leader of the democratic world. So I guess the question is if they really want to put an effort on both sides and establish some architectural, some institutions so that the relation works at its best. If things were different, of course, you will have the Mexican government spearheading an effort of establishing some sort of a commission between our countries or reestablishing the high-level economic dialogue or this kind of institutions that could bring the relation to a new normal, if you will. But López Obrador has said that the best foreign policy is the interior policy, so he wants to concentrate in interior policy. He has even mentioned that he doesn't want to travel. So I'm sorry to say, but I don't think that we are going to have in the next few months a working relation that we are all dreaming of is going to be more on an issue by issue basis.
So this is an example of something that would be a tumultuous, difficult issue to start off this relationship. And what other issues do you see coming up that are going to be some complex issues for these two administrations to handle?
Well, one could be immigration. And that depends on what would be the role of the immigration topic in general in the presidency of Mr. Biden. And it was said that he wants to send to Congress right away proposals so that the Dreamers and we can have some sort of a path to citizenship. In the case of Mexico, 5 million people who are undocumented in the U.S. If that is true, I'm sure there will be some other consequences related to the immigration policies that President Trump had implemented. In some of these cases, Mexico would agree and it certainly will benefit towards the cooperation between the two countries. For example, the role that the Mexican National Guard is playing right now, really being a border patrol in the northern and the southern part, blocking all efforts from particularly Guatemalan, Salvadorians, and Hondurians traveling through Mexico going to the U.S. These may change in case the Biden administration changes the policy towards asylum. But also, the Biden administration will give more emphasis to the human rights issue, which is something that the López Obrador government is not happy about. They don't want to talk about human rights. So immigration may have these two phases. One phase that will be more pro-Mexico in the sense that for history, Mexico has been promoting immigration and respectful immigration and so forth, which might be one way that the Biden administration will move. But on the other hand, the Biden administration will be more reluctant to accept any violation of human rights and the issue of protecting migrants, whether they are Mexicans or not, traveling through Mexico could be one of those irritants that will bring the topic back to the table.
It's interesting you say that because we know that Joe Biden has talked about ending Remain in Mexico, the program that is keeping asylum seekers in the northern part of Mexico. And a report recently came out of human rights abuses against some of those people that are sort of in this waiting period. We're going to have to see how long it takes to solve that issue at the border. López Obrador has also talked of absorbing a number of autonomous agencies into ministries and in the fields of energy, telecom, transparency, and more. This has been quite a contentious issue right here in Mexico. And I'm curious on your thoughts about the step that he's proposing taking and what it could mean, particularly in terms of rules and regulations in the USMCA, given agreements around energy and more.
Well, I think that we should divide the topic into two. I think there are some of these autonomous organizations or agencies that are more for domestic consumption, if you will. They are not related to USMCA. So any opinion from the U.S. government will not do anything for López Obrador to change his mind. And he's a very stubborn mind, as you know, and he thinks that autonomous entities just use unwisely the budget that is allocated from public resources, and there is nothing after that spending. There is nothing positive that comes out from those agencies. And that's the reason why he wants to abolish autonomous entities. If you have a president like López Obrador that would like to have a playing field controlled by Pemex and CFE, the Power Commission, in order to have a monopoly of the federal government into it, well, you don't need an autonomous entity to tell you what to do because you want to have the total ownership of the sector. And that's why he is trying to remove all autonomous entities related to energy and related to telecom. And of course, he wants to come back to the state-owned companies that will have the monopoly in telecom and energy and so forth. Certainly, the USMCA put some brakes into these intents, and this will have an interesting sort of discussion here in Mexico because for Mexico, treaties are as important as any law that abides by the Constitution. So it's going to be a sort of a scholar discussion and eventually probably will reach the Supreme Court. And this is one of the arguments that the Supreme Court, I guess, will have to hear and eventually decide whether the treaty is above any law or not. Probably they will hold the treaties, and that's why I divide it in two. I think one probably will maintain eventually energy and telecom, but I'm afraid that the ones related to transparency and even the Human Rights Commission will be in peril to disappear and eventually being absorbed by ministries on the Mexican government.
And it will be something that certainly here in Mexico we'll be watching closely, given that some of these agencies end up being so key in uncovering corruption issues and corruption scandals. So we'll definitely be watching that here. Keeping a little bit with the USMCA, one thing we've heard in recent days is that the foreign ministry here in Mexico is seeking to have its vaccination plan coincide and to work with the Biden administration to consider how do we roll out our vaccine plan in a simultaneous way with an eye toward economic recovery for all of North America. Now, in many ways, Mexico is ahead of a lot of Latin America. It has several contracts with different vaccine producers. It's already started to unroll vaccines, but it's still well behind the United States, if we're going to just talk about quantity. So how do you see vaccine rollout? How do you see that as a possibility for a plan in terms of the two countries working together?
Well, I think that's an interesting question. And I think it's difficult to answer because I don't see any attitude for the Mexican government to be changed because of Biden's new, say, policy towards increasing the speed in which vaccines are being administered in the United States. The Mexican government has been very reluctant towards the participation of the private sector, purchasing vaccines, and even participating in the distribution of the vaccines, less to say on the actual vaccination. So unless this becomes a more critical issue than it is, it's already a very critical issue, I don't see AMLO's government changing its attitude towards the pace in which the vaccination rollout has been taking place. In that sense, probably one of the things that could help in terms of bridging the differences between our countries is perhaps not to think about COVID-19, but to think about future pandemics, which is something that, of course, we need to be aware that this will happen. After the H1N1 influenza problem that both countries were affected, and of course that started in Mexico, a trilateral group was established called NAPAPI. And this group was established in order to exchange information, ideas, intelligence, if you will, related to the pandemics. And this is a group that has not participated heavily in the discussions among the three countries, Canada, Mexico, and the US. And it would be a good idea now to sort of relaunching the NAPAPI strategy, perhaps refurbishing the strategy. And this might be a much better way for changing the attitude of the Mexican government, not pinpointing that you are doing wrongly right now. You don't want to participate with the private sector. That's why you are lagging behind. Rather than doing that, perhaps would be much wiser to talk about a strategy for a future epidemic or a pandemic, so we can talk among the three countries what are the best lessons that we can extract from H1N1 and now from COVID-19 to develop a new and future strategy.
That's a very interesting approach because it's a much softer approach. It's a much, rather than talking about who's doing what well and badly. So,
yeah, well, one thing that we have learned just watching in López Obrador, and actually not from my personal experience, but my experience as an engineer, we had an earthquake, as you know, in 2017, and we have had different challenges for reconstruction of schools and buildings, hospitals and so forth, is that whenever you present something that goes against his ideas, he becomes even more radical in those ideas. So the best way is to sort of accept, but then present different facts, the same alternate ways of approaching things that can save his face. And eventually he sort of accepts that there are things that could be changed.
This ties in very well to one question I have for you. Now, you served as the Undersecretary for North America for the Foreign Ministry here in Mexico, and you were talking a little bit about how to work with the AMLO government. What would you tell the U.S. government in this coming year in 2021 to be keeping an eye on and being concerned with in terms of working with the Mexican government?
I would say there are three things. First is that the American public servants that will work with under President Biden will know Mexico, but will know Mexico in the 2015-2016. And Mexico has changed. So they have to realize that players are different and the ideas are different. Secondly, the other issue they have to learn is that they have to be very patient because they're going to be sort of involved and the counterparts will be people not as professional as they were in previous governments. They are public servants that are new in their jobs. But the third lesson is that even though that they have to be patient, they have to be very pragmatical in their approach. They have to maintain the systematic approach that was one of the characteristics of the Biden-Obama administration. That means that you have a series of agencies or a series of mechanisms established for the relation. You have a follow-up of these mechanisms every so often, and then you have a metrics that actually tells you whether we were improving or not. And I think that's going to be a challenge because the current Mexican government doesn't think in that way. They don't actually respond to facts. Sometimes they respond to ideas or to beliefs, which is fine. I mean, I don't have a problem with creativity, but creativity has to be measured somehow. And that's why metrics are so important.
Mm-hmm. And given that you served in your role during the time that Barack Obama was president, and so you've gotten to see Biden working in the executive branch, he did take in that role a big focus on Latin America, so you're familiar with working with him. What advice would you give to the Mexican government and to the AMLO government about working with the Biden administration?
Well, first of all, President Biden knows very well what's going around in Latin America. He knows very well, in general terms, what is going on in Mexico. He may need some tuning on what he knows about Mexico, let's say, over the past 3-4 years. But this is something that he will learn in very few visits or very few meetings with his staff. But from the Mexican point of view, they need to understand, the Mexican government need to understand that you will have a knowledgeable group of people on the other side. Secondly, they need to realize that because of the profiles and the background of these people, they are very professional. And thirdly, what I think probably is the most important topic, is that Mexico, in my opinion, needs to realize that the one that benefits the most with a good relation between the U.S. and Mexico is Mexico. So that's why I think Mexico needs to take the lead in the relation, needs to promote new ways for having a better relation with the U.S. in all fronts, whether it's immigration, security, and what have you, so that this working relation becomes really an area of interest for President Biden and an area of interest to President López Obrador. And this would be a common topic that can, you know, be sort of presented as a success for both presidents. One thing that the Mexican authorities need to understand is that the U.S. government sort of reacts related to crisis in the world. And you don't want to be one of those issues of a critical content in the desk of the U.S. president, as it was with President Trump when the immigration crisis came to his desk because of this flood of people that was allowed for Mexican authorities to pass. This became a crisis in the desk of the president. That's why the Mexican National Guard being the border patrol. This is one of the things that you don't want to happen. Rather, you need to present the positive topics, which are so many, for both countries, so that the relation really moves in a smooth way.
I want to ask you one last question. We know that López Obrador does not leave Mexico very much, but he did leave Mexico last year in the middle of the pandemic to meet with Donald Trump at the White House. I'm curious, what would you place bets on? How soon do you think that Joe Biden and López Obrador will meet in person?
Well, firstly, I don't think they are going to be meeting in Washington, because López Obrador already visited Washington. And I don't think that will be politically wise to go back and visit the U.S. president. So I presume also to sort of remove all these anxieties and perhaps angers that the Americans may have because of the recognition of López Obrador, probably López Obrador will be bold and invite President Biden to visit Mexico. Probably being very pragmatical, both of them, the best would be to meet at the border. That would be a very interesting message, because that's where Trump built the wall. And this is a place in which Biden will say, I don't want a wall. We don't need a wall. And for López Obrador, that would be a good way to save his face about the wall. So probably they are going to be meeting, in my opinion, if I were going to advise them, to meet at the border would be a very interesting idea. The last time that presidents met at the border was many years ago. When would that happen? Probably in the first 3 to 4 months. I think that's something that, again, sending a message towards good relation, good economic trade, the border makes a lot of sense. And once we have the COVID-19 much more in control, well, that would be probably May, June, perhaps that would be a good time for both presidents to meet, and perhaps at the border.
That would be an inspired choice, and it would be an interesting choice, as we know that the border has been shut down to anything but essential crossings and commerce for almost a year now. So it would be an interesting step to take on it for a number of reasons. It's been really great to talk to you, Sergio. Very informative. Thank you for taking the time with me today.
Thank you very much, Kerry.
Thanks for listening. I'm your host, Karin Zissis. This episode was produced by Katie Hopkins. The music in this podcast was recorded at America Society in New York City. For more about online concerts, visit musicoftheamericas.org. We hope you enjoyed this episode. If so, leave us a review, subscribe, and share at Apple, Google, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.